Some physical conditions are caused by a sudden injury or trauma, but others, like sciatica, can be the result of regular, everyday activities. And guess what? That doesn't mean it hurts any less than if it was kind of a bad sort of sudden injury. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Great to have with us Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, great to have you back.
Good to be here.
Also with us today, Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at UW Hospitals and Clinics. And Bill, great to see you as well.
Great to be back, Larry. Thank you.
You know, I wanted to talk a bit with you about sciatica. And Bill, maybe I'll go to you first here to begin with. Sciatica can be a miserable thing to live with. First, maybe, what is it? Well, you can define it for
sure.
us.
Sure. Anybody who's had it will never forget it. There's nothing like a little nerve pain to really humble you. Sciatic nerve is a large nerve. Goes down from the buttock area down the back of the leg and then splits and goes below the knee. And thankfully, not everybody with back pain has sciatica. There would be a lot of miserable people. But there are certain conditions that can lead to pressure on a nerve. And any nerve that has compression out for any length of time doesn't like it and can get pretty angry and can cause some pretty horrible pain. The sciatic nerve is tied to the lumbar spine and the sacral area, and so nerves can get irritated up in the low back area that can result in sciatica. There's also, we've had a few people call about piriformis syndrome. Mm-hmm. Sciatic nerve comes right out of the buttock area, and that's another area where that nerve can get compressed or irritated. The pain is, it can be sharp, it can be shooting like a lightning bolt, the pain down the back of the leg. And when it gets severe enough, it can also result in some concerning symptoms. Numbness, I mean, people lose the feeling of skin, particularly below the knee, and weakness. Mm-hmm. And can develop foot drop or, you know, other walking issues or stair climbing, descending issues with sciatica.
And usually it develops from just sitting on your rear end all the time, or is it?
Well, it's, you know, that can get some people into trouble. Anything that puts direct pressure on the nerve or decreases the space available for nerves. So people who sit for a living and then sit most of their free time can develop certain types of low back conditions that can lead to pressure on a nerve. It can be trauma related. People can herniate a disc, which can be associated with a one big trauma or lots of repetitive lifting or bending. And then it's the disc that's putting pressure on the nerve and causing the leg symptoms. So there's a whole host of potential causes, but severe advanced arthritis can lead to stenosis or narrowing, so down the space for the nerves, as well as direct trauma to the nerve itself.
And I imagine, you know, if you're overweight, it probably doesn't help either.
No, it doesn't help at all. And, you know, either leading to the onset of sciatica and making it more difficult to get rid of it as well. You know, you mentioned some of the treatment options earlier, and for most people, we'll respond to a combination of therapy, manual therapy, mobilization, manipulation, exercise, and combined with patient education. We do a lot of teaching of people. When a nerve gets irritated like that, it doesn't like to be stretched. And so I've told more people than I'd like to care to think about to stop stretching their hamstrings. It may feel better for a couple of minutes, but actually it's making it worse over time. And even the little simple things when you're walking to shorten your stride length. Because when you really stride out to try to stretch the leg, that stretches the nerve a little bit. And so if the nerve's irritated, it doesn't like that kind of stretch. So it's a combination of the manual therapy, exercise, and patient education. And there are some people who don't respond. That's where a nerve injection can come into play. Hmm. And there are some people who need surgery to take pressure off the nerve. So kind of a wide continuum of potential care.
You know, Clara in Milwaukee has a question relating to this. So let's go there. Clara, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering how standing all day might affect sciatica.
Well, it can be a big problem. And Clara, what you described is when there's not enough space for nerves in the low back area, when our backs are relatively backward bent or extended, which happens when we stand, when we reach overhead, there's actually more pressure on the nerve. And people tend to feel better in those situations when they're sitting or slumped forward, there's actually more space for nerves. So spine position can make a huge difference on the status of the nerve. And so people who stand all day, if they can modify their workstation, it helps some if you can have one foot up on a stool or like an old bar rung.
A rail at a bar.
Yes, but most places at work don't have a bar rail, but a stool. So if you have one foot up, and that so you've bent one leg and the other leg is straight, that keeps our back from reaching the far excursion of backward bending or extension.
Okay.
So switching back and forth in one leg versus the other can help some. But standing puts our spines in a relatively extended posture, which narrows the space available for nerves.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Clara, for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Email from Nick in Milwaukee. It says, one reason my sciatica gets worse is that I have no core strength. But exercise like sit-ups just irritate that nerve like crazy. Are there exercises I can do to build core strength without irritating that nerve?
Yes, there are. Thankfully, there are lots of options. Yes, sit-ups can get a lot of people into trouble. Intentions are good. You know, strengthening the stomach and the deep abdominals is an important part of our core. But the pressure inside the discs goes up hugely, exponentially, when we do a sit-up, especially thinking the repetitions people do. And so if it's a bulging disc or herniated disc that's putting pressure on the nerve, sit-ups are going to kill people and in terms of their pain. So there are lots of other positions and much safer positions in terms of the back to strengthen the core than doing sit-ups. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, a couple of visits to a physical therapist can get people, kind of tell people what they shouldn't do, and then safe ways to start strengthening the core and how to progress. But sit-ups can get people into trouble.
There are about 100 different ways to strengthen your abdominal muscles. So part of the reason for seeing a PT is it's hard to know which ones are going to work for you. So if you go in and you see somebody once or twice, they can try a variety of different things in different positions, on your back, on your side, on your stomach, in standing, and, you know, in half kneeling, whatever, and find the set that's right for you. And then, you know, see you back, see how those go, and advance those exercises.
Yeah. Marcus in Green Bay, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hello. Last month, September 19th, I had bilateral knee surgery, and I was in recovery for about 3 days, and then I had 5 days of physical therapy right up there in the hospital. And then, anyway, so my knees are doing real good and everything, and then, you know, there's still some pain. But the thing is yeah, even when I was up in the hospital, my left leg, that's my left knee, he had to spend a lot more time on that when it was really wore out and everything before I finally went in for surgery. So there's a lot of swelling in the foot and the ankle and the knee on the left side, and then there's a real lot of pain on that left side. So now, as I heal and everything, my right knee, there's pretty much hardly no pain at all. My left knee at times aches a lot, but the main pain that I'm getting is below the knee, and that's how it was in the hospital, too. It's kind of like in my shin and my ankle, and it's, it is very painful, and at night I'm not able to sleep. You know, I'm constantly waking up and moaning and groaning. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, how long should this go on? I mean, I can accept it, knowing that it's supposed to be like that. But
so, Marcus, can I ask what you had surgery for? What did they do for your knees?
Well, I had arthritis, so there was, they replaced both my knees.
Oh, so they were both knee replacements, total knee replacements.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have you been back to the PT since then? You said you had 5 days in the hospital. Did you have more PT after that?
No, they determined that I didn't need it. I was getting around on a cane and getting up and down the steps fine, and doing a lot of my exercises and stretching, on my own pretty diligently, so yeah.
Okay, well, I'd say that given that your right knee's doing so well, that was kind of what they expected, that the time course of your healing to be, but your left one is not. For whatever reason, whether it was, complications during surgery or the replacement didn't go in as easily as the first one, you really shouldn't be having that much swelling and pain in your calf at this point in time. So I would go back in and make an appointment to see a PT or see your physician. I presume you're still on some kind of medication like a Coumadin or Warfarin, or are you off those things post-op? The things to prevent blood clots.
What's, I'm sorry. For the blood clotting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking a Xarelto, I think it's called.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
But you should go in and have that checked. You shouldn't be having that much swelling and pain in your calf and ankle at this point in time. Mm-hmm. So I'd get back in.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Chad in Phillips, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Chad.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This past summer, it was mid-July-ish time frame, I was playing some sports, and I had kind of overextended the back of my thigh, and I'd kind of figured it was like a hamstring pull or a strain, because there was no bruising associated with it or anything. And so I iced it when I got back when I got home that night, and but it still hurts. And it's not a constant pain, but I can tell it's actually affecting how I walk. I can feel if I'm trying to, walk at a brisk pace, I can feel there's a slight tinge on the back, like right underneath, like the right underneath the butt cheek, like, but very deep in there. So I was just curious if this is something more I should kind of get looked at, or if it's just a time to heal thing.
Well, what you described fits in what I had described earlier, Chad, in terms of it. You know, we injure hamstrings fairly frequently, but it's not always a hamstring. And it could be sciatic nerve. In a brisk walk, when I visualize that, I see people motoring along and stride, their stride length is longer than usual, which, again, puts some stretch on the sciatic nerve. Are you having any symptoms below your knee? On that side?
No, nothing at all.
Okay. All right. At this stage, you're now looking at, 3 months? And doesn't sound like it's getting any better. I'd go in and see a physical therapist, have them examine you. I mean, certainly they'll check your hamstring out, but they'll also check the hip area, sacroiliac joint, and the lumbar area as well, and try to determine what the culprit is. Rehab, which you can do lots of on your own, is very different for a hamstring injury as opposed to sciatic nerve being irritated. So what you could be dealing with may not be hamstring, I think, as you're surmising here. And 3 months, if it's just a tight muscle or muscle, you should be better by now. And clearly you're not.
Good luck, Chad. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And turning next to Jason in Oak Creek. Jason, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for having me. I have a combination of degenerative disc disease and an irritated sciatica. Knowing this, I mean, what should I do going forward with the, going to the doctor?
Okay. So, Jason, so it sounds like you've been to a doctor before. You've been diagnosed with the osteoarthritis disc degeneration, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And are you having symptoms below your knee at all?
Yeah. I could be just walking, and like I said, if I walk briskly or I overstride, the pain shoots like lightning down to almost my heel.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, I have to literally stop because it feels like somebody's stabbed me in the back.
Right. Yeah. That sounds like nerve. Any numbness or tingling or weakness with this?
Yeah. I had one morning where I got up and my back had been hurting pretty much all that week. And with that nerve pain, and I couldn't even lift my leg off the floor.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the worst case scenario with this is you can have pressure on enough nerves in the lumbar spine where people lose bowel and bladder control. And when that happens, you need to go see your doctor immediately, urgent care or emergency room. When you're losing sensation quickly or losing strength where you're tripping over your toes or having a hard time getting up and down stairs, that's also a time you need to see your physician urgently. Short of that, if it's primarily pain, which isn't fun to have, then you don't have quite the urgency. But if it's disc degeneration that's causing your sciatica, that implies that you either have bone spurs or you have disc-based narrowing that is putting pressure on a nerve. There are some different rehabilitation approaches. Exercising in a pool. Laurie has seen a number of people with these types of symptoms in the pool where you unweight the spine. That's where you can end up doing lots of core work and doing lots of flexibility work that would be too painful to do in a land-based program. To get symptoms under control, sometimes we use traction or other kinds of unweighting, which is really what the pool does. But you got to get the pain up above the knee before it's going to leave the back. And so there are a series of exercises that we try in order to do that. So it sounds like interfering with your life quite a bit. If you've not seen a physical therapist, or have not had a good shot at rehabilitation along the way, then that's what I would recommend. You're not doomed to have this forever.
Okay. Good luck, Jason, and thank you so much for calling. Taking a look at, sciatica, we've been talking a lot about today, but other aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne-Brody. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, though, physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne-Brody are helping you deal with aches and pains and sprains and strains, and certainly inviting your questions. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, post on my Facebook page, go to the Larry Mueller Show. Our phone lines are all filled up right at the moment, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Mindy in Reedsburg up next. Mindy, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I wanted to know about radial frequency ablation to the nerve. And when you have a multitude of problems like herniated disc and the bone spurs, how do you know whether to treat the nerve or treat the disc? And I wanted to know if the radial frequency ablation has a good success rate.
Okay. Well, let me answer that one first. There are different types of injections and procedures can be done to decrease nerve pain. And what you're describing is kind of the end of the continuum where, in essence, they destroy the nerve so the impulses aren't getting down into the leg or to the skin. There is very little research that supports it in terms of long-term recovery and return to function. And, the nerve's there for a purpose. And it serves an important role. And so I have worked with quite a few people that have had injections where it's, they inject steroids in the area of the nerve to decrease swelling, kind of a nerve block. But the ablation you're talking about is more permanent. And I'm not aware of any research that shows.
Do they actually destroy the nerve?
Well, in essence, yes. And so the nerve is not, the impulses are not getting through, and it's a long-term procedure as opposed to a temporary nerve block or putting steroids in that are going to act for a few days or a couple of weeks. So it's much more permanent than lots of the other injections. And so it very much should be a last resort, very much a last resort. And again, I'm not aware of any long-term research that shows that it's successful in terms of quality of life. I don't know, Laurie, are you familiar with any kind of research there?
No, not at all. Not at all. We see patients in the pool who have had this done. But, of course, we see a biased population. We see the people who fail, and then the physician sends them to therapy. So typically, if they do well, they never show up for physical therapy. So we have to rely on what we read in the literature in terms of outcomes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then your question about treating the herniated disc or the spurs or the nerve is a really good question. And that really is... when you're thinking surgery, that's where the thought process has to go. What are they going to do to open up more space for the nerve, take pressure on the nerve? But if you're not having surgery, we really don't think in terms of the bone spur or the disc. It's back pain versus leg symptoms. And we have different approaches to eliminate the leg pain, move it up toward the back, and then try to minimize the back pain. So, we just don't think in those terms of the anatomy and from a rehab perspective. It may impact what we do, but not drive what we do per se.
There we go. And thank you again for calling. And Jim in Cambridge, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling in because I have just overheard what you guys were saying. I have, I believe, sciatic nerve problems. It's at least what my, and a possible bulging disc. But I go to a chiropractor regularly. And he's told me that I should do stretches to try and relieve that pain. And I just heard you guys say not to do stretches. The one, I don't know whether you'd call it physical therapy, but the one thing I do to try and relieve the pain is I actually have my wife stand, you know, with her heel on the nerve and or heel on that area and then release. And I can feel a huge release. When it does happen, I don't know. I mean, can you explain to me why stretching is bad again?
Yeah, it's stretching the hamstrings can get people into trouble. There are stretches for the spine that can be very, very productive. And there's different stretches depending on if you're in the acute phase or more you're starting to recover. In the acute phase, there are certain stretches of the spine that actually give the nerves a little more room, a little more space. So that can be very helpful in the beginning. When a nerve is irritated and you have kind of acute sciatica, stretching it is only going to make it worse. And you know pretty quickly when that's the case. So it's the stretching of the hamstrings that can get some people into trouble.
There are some techniques that look a little bit like stretching that are actually nerve gliding exercises. Mm-hmm. So it may be moving an ankle, or if it's in your neck, it may be moving your elbow or wrist a certain way. And the idea in that case is to mobilize the nerve as it glides through the nerve sheath, but it's not actually stretching the nerve per se. We call it flossing because that's a little more what it's like.
Yeah, and in your wife standing on you, my guess is she's, you know, these nerves also attach to muscles, and when a nerve is irritated, there's just more activity within the muscles, and muscles can knot up, and so if she's getting on a knot, I mean, those are the kind of things that hurt good, and so you're getting kind of a relaxation of a muscle group that is probably part of your symptoms. But if that's all you had was a muscle issue, again, you'd probably be better by your wife doing this deep kind of massage over the muscle group. But there's a reason those muscles are knotting up.
It's something I've had for 5 or 6 years. I mean, it's been going on. It's never it's always like a constant dull annoyance. But every once in a while, it'll act up. So I've never gone to a doctor to deal with it or gone to a physical therapist, and I'm kind of wondering whether I'm injuring myself further by not.
Well, some of the things you may be doing are setting you up for a return of the symptoms. You know, again, you should have a plan when you're not having sciatica, what to do to help prevent it. And then you should have plan B when you start getting sciatica. These are things I now do or stop doing to give that nerve a chance to quiet down. So, as I mentioned before, the education part is really, really important. Because there are things that we do day to day that can irritate a nerve, you know, irritate our backs and stir things up.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying a trip to a physical therapist might be useful?
Yeah, it might be. To get a second opinion. You know, Jim, if you had told me you'd seen a physical therapist for 6 years and this is where you were, I'd say go get a second opinion. Or next time you go back to your chiropractor, talk about what seems to be this recurring pattern and see if they come up with any different ideas for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it. And Gretchen in Spring Green wonders if standing desks are good to prevent or treat sciatica.
Do you want to get that?
Standing
desks, well, I don't, you know, prevention really falls in the category of exercise, maintaining a good body weight, avoiding prolonged sitting or standing. So if you have to stand at your work or workstation or sit for long periods of time at your workstation, having a standing desk that can give you an option for your work position makes good sense. So there are some who have a computer on a table that can raise and lower so you can stand for periods of time and then lower it back down to sit. Also, you can see on Larry's Facebook page is the treadmill desk. And I know a number of people who have done that. In fact, one of my students built her own to work at it while she works on her dissertation. So that makes good sense, too, especially if you can do voice to text. You know, you maybe you're dictating, you're writing, you're editing or something like that. That makes good sense. So in general, the more frequently you can change positions, whether it's even if you're sitting, moving from a standard chair to a ball, to a different kind of a chair that allows you to change up the loading pattern in your spine, it makes good sense.
Terry in the UP, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I wondered if you could speak to the difference between sciatica and neuralgia paresthesia, or burning thigh pain, because that's what I have. It's not everybody. They want to all jump on being sciatica, but it's, I don't have the symptoms of sciatica.
Okay.
But I do have the burning thigh.
So where is the burning that you experience, Terry?
Well, it's on the outside of above the knee and the outside of the leg. There's a little numbness there, and then a couple months ago it got really bad, and it's like it's on fire.
Yes, yeah.
And it's just, I mean, the weight of a sheet was the worst possible thing in the world. I look down, expect to see flames and smoke, you know.
Yeah, boy,
if I put a little pressure on it, it's all right. But the thing is, they want to jump on it sciatica. My symptoms aren't sciatica. You know,
yeah.
I don't have the sciatic pain.
No, yeah, you're right.
It's another nerve.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The sciatic nerve is not the only nerve that goes down into the leg. And what you're describing has to do with the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve.
Yeah.
That, again, branches off the lumbosacral nerve plexus. And it can get entrapped or irritated, actually, in the front of the pelvis. And
yeah, that's what I was wondering. I do have degenerative discs, though. That's what they're concerned with.
Mm-hmm.
We did x-rays of the hip and lumbar, and there is a narrowing of the spaces in the disc. So down the road somewhere, sciatica may come, or this.
Yeah.
Which I was trying to determine if it's the disc that's causing this or it's entrapped somewhere else.
But yeah, well, what you're describing, if it's truly lateral femoral cutaneous nerve entrapment, it's not in the lumbar spine. The entrapment occurs more out on the pelvis, in the front of the pelvis, actually.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too. And I'm a little overweight, and so, you know, I've taken to exercising and losing weight, and they put me on a week of methyl prednisolone or whatever.
Mm-hmm, yeah, prednisolone.
For inflammation. And it's cleared up pretty well. It's still there, but the symptoms are way, way down.
Yeah, go ahead.
And good for you.
It seems to me the exercise for sciatica and this, as far as discs, are all good. A stretching of the spine. In other words, like pull-ups.
Yeah.
Anything that does that would all be good. So I'm trying to be proactive in preventing my...
Well, those are all good things. The other thing that can get the nerve that you have flared up, if you have a significant leg length discrepancy, that can predispose someone to have this. And also, there are certain muscles around the hip that if you can stretch out will also help decrease the irritation at that entrapment site. And a condition you're describing, Terry, also rarely causes symptoms below the knee. Usually it's outside of the thigh and it stops at the knee, whereas sciatica oftentimes or typically is associated with symptoms below the knee.
There you go. Good. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Terry. I want to give Lori in Port Washington a chance to join in this conversation. And Lori, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hello. What can we do for you?
Well, I've had numerous spinal fusions. I've had two of them in my upper back, one of them in my lower back. But recently, I've been experiencing severe pain in my left shoulder and upper forearm, and sometimes in the chest area. It almost like stroke symptoms, but I don't have other stroke symptoms. And my hand goes numb, and I'll be taking a plate to the sink, and all of a sudden it'll drop. And I don't know if that's related to the fusion, or if that's nerve or muscle, or if there's anything I could do. The pain, I take a lot of medication for pain. I'm under the care of a pain management specialist, and none of that seems to work for the pain that's in my shoulder.
Well, the spine fusions at the levels you describe would not lead to shoulder and arm pain or your dropping things. That would be coming from your cervical spine. That being said, the fact that you have fusions at several other levels in your spine suggests that you probably have inherent pathology in your spine. Has anyone looked at your cervical spine?
Not since the fusion, no.
Okay. Well, it might be time to have that looked at. The symptoms that you describe that go into your arm, and typically if they pass your elbow, we look first at your cervical spine. Primary shoulder problems tend to stay above the elbow. Anything that goes down below the elbow or into your hand where you're dropping things, we consider that to be nerve-related and typically from the cervical spine. So given that your spine was, you have enough pathology in your spine to undergo several fusions, suggests that you probably have similar pathology in your neck and should probably have that checked out.
I recently had a spinal stimulator inserted for my lower back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if that could be a contributing factor to it.
Well, again, like Laurie said, the difference between the neck versus the lumbar spine is the key here. I mean, I'm sure all the procedures you've had done in the lumbar spine are impacting your posture and how you move and could be setting you up for some problems up higher in the spine. You know, spinal stimulators should be helping you control your pain. And hopefully allowing you to be more active and to participate more in a rehabilitation program. You know, again, I think Lori's right. The things you described, the nut dropping things and the numbness, if that hasn't been addressed by your physician, that's who you should see.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. We had a Facebook question from Claire. Do you have any advice for a mom of a one-year-old to not irritate sciatic or other SI nerve injuries?
Oh, sure. You know, we tend to spend a lot of time bent over our children, whether it's, you know, feeding, dressing, whatever. And the key would be to, you know, to try to get that child at the appropriate height so you're not bending so much, doing repetitive bending, or being in a bent position for long periods of time. So changing up your positions frequently, making sure that your changing tables and so on are of a height that are sufficient to keep you in a good position. If you're still nursing, make sure that you're in a good supportive chair that has, you know, a lumbar support, and so on. You know, using a backpack or a front pack to hold the baby so you can stand up as straight as possible. And then, you know, taking time for yourself to exercise, stretch, and care for yourself so that you stay as healthy as you can.
And another Facebook question relating to pregnancy. Do you have tips for avoiding sciatica in later pregnancies? I had it in third trimester last pregnancy. I'm healthy weight and get exercise, but I do sit 8 or more hours at work.
Well, I think we go back to the points that Bill made at the beginning about changing position frequently. You know, keeping her back strong, her abdominal muscles strong, her legs strong, changing positions frequently if she can stand sometime during her work, you know, or changing position. And I'm not sure what she's doing for exercise. She says she gets exercise, but you could consider exercising in a pool. If you're exercising on land, it could place additional load on your back because of the weight of the baby. So maybe if you're loading your back during the rest of the day, your exercise time should be unloading your back, and that might occur best in a pool.
Jane in Phillips, Wisconsin. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I did join your show late, so if you gave this recommendation, I apologize. I was misdiagnosed with sciatica for over 10 years and had several regular x-rays done. And what they ended up finding after an MRI last year was I had a spinal cord schwannoma tumor.
Mm.
And so I hear some people calling in saying that they've had issues on and off for several years, and I know that MRIs are expensive, but this was the only thing that actually showed that I had a tumor.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's a good thing you had the MRI. You know, there's, again, SAT can be caused by different things, entities that decrease the space for the nerve, which typically can be arthritic changes, but you can have a tumor within the nerve itself, or you can have a tumor in the spinal column, in bone, for example, that also could impact nerve. And the type of tumor you describe will not show up on X-ray or plain film. You know, thankfully, in a general population, tumors causing back pain or sciatica is really, really, really rare. But when someone's not improving over time, or they improve for short term only, and then long term they seem to be getting worse and worse, that certainly is the place when advanced imaging MRI is very appropriate. So,
and Jane, have you been helped?
Oh yes, I had surgery done November 18th last year, and I haven't had one issue since. But when they did get in there, he did say that the nerve that was causing the sciatica-type problems, that nerve was completely crushed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So. Yeah, well, it's a good thing you got the MRI finally, but 10 years is a long time.
Well, so. and thanks a lot for calling.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's worth everybody having that in the back of their mind. Mm-hmm. As you say, it's rare.
Yeah. You know, for people with low back pain, only the general population, you know, the estimations are that people coming to see a physician for low back pain, 1 to 7 people out of 1,000 will have cancer driving the back pain. And sciatica is probably the similar numbers. So it's really unusual, but it does happen. So again, people who are not responding to the typical care, then those are some of the things that they start looking at to rule out.
Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody, our physical therapist, with us today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at dealing with aches and pains. Sciatica has been on our minds a lot, but other sprains and strains as well, with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody. Bill, a professor at the UW School of Medicine Public Health, senior physical therapist, and Laurie Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Kevin, who's traveling through the area, has a question for you guys. Let's go there. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. I am someone that can affirm the benefits of physical therapy. I've had back problems for 20-odd years and seen a variety of different physical therapists. In the last 5 years, I found one who has dramatically improved my symptoms, which include all sorts of sciatica and cervical spine issues. A combination of the right exercises and the discipline to do them every day has improved my condition dramatically.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, that's good news. Can I ask, so what was different for the therapist you went to these last 5 years as opposed to the first 15 years? What did they do differently?
They were a different array of exercises, and they were better. I was taught better how to do the exercises that I had learned, you know, 20 years ago, from very simple, you know, like that cat exercise on all fours.
Mm-hmm. Cat
like
and camel.
I got proper instruction on that, and it totally works and helps now, whereas before it seemed to just aggravate matters.
That's really good information. You know, I saw somebody just this morning before I came over here, and I said, the issue is not whether or not you should do this exercise or not, but it's how you do the exercise. So that's really key. It's not just, oh, you do a biceps curl or, oh, you do, you know, the cat and camel. But Kevin's absolutely right. It's how you do it. And that's where the finesse of it comes in, and seeing the physical therapist could say, oh, no, wait a minute. You first need to tighten here and then move there. You know, you don't do them together or whatever it is. And the other important thing that Kevin said is the discipline to do it. So,
right. Yeah.
So I think that education is part of it, so that if they understand what they're supposed to do and why they're supposed to do it, then you're going to more likely to actually do it.
Right. And you know, when, no matter which practitioner you go to, if you're simply handed a sheet of exercise told do these, then you need to stop and say, I want to go through these with somebody. Just giving a sheet of exercise and say, go do these on your own, that's where people can get themselves into trouble. And then they leave thinking, well, these aren't exercise doesn't help me. Well, that sheet of exercise didn't help you. But there are nuances, like Laurie said, of how to do them that fit you as an individual, and when to do them. What time of the day sometimes is really critical in terms of getting the best therapeutic value.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you.
I can confirm all that. Oh, you're welcome. And I really, it's the physical therapists that have helped me a great deal. So,
Safe travels.
Yeah, yep. Safe travels. Thank you. Kevin from Brooklyn, New York, I guess. Bob in Brussels. Your turn. Hi, Bob.
Yes, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem with when I sit down or lay down for X number of hours, my knee is locking up. And when I stand up, I can barely walk. One leg is fine, but the other one is just locked up, and I'm in a lot of pain. But if I move that leg that hurts, the knee that hurts back and forth like a pendulum back and forth, it loosens up, And eventually, after, you know, I'd say a half, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, then I can walk without with some pain, but not, you know, not as much as what I had when I first got up.
Hmm.
Now, it continues throughout the day. It seems to be okay, but the minute that I rest or sit down or really lay down and I keep the leg straight, anytime the leg is straight, the leg locks, right? It kind of locks up.
I don't know what I have here.
I have been going up and down a ladder quite a bit the last 2 weeks.
So this just started in the last few weeks, Bob?
Yes, yes.
Okay, no problems before then.
The only problem I had before on that would have been, I'm kind of losing you here, but the only problem I had was in the back of the knee before, but...
Okay.
I can listen to your answer on the phone. On the radio.
Got it. Okay. Well, it sounds like a fairly classic arthritis problem. When you say locks up, it's people use that term differently. Typically, we associate locking with a loose body in the knee. So, if he has some arthritis, there may be a small piece of cartilage or meniscus that's floating around in his knee. And when he lays down and holds it straight, it gets kind of stuck, almost acts like a doorstop in between the joint. So then when he kind of swings it like a pendulum, that gets the fluids in the joint moving, and it probably moves that little piece out of the way. So when he said that he had some problems in the back of the knee, my suspicion then is a Baker cyst. And a Baker cyst is kind of a weak spot in your joint capsule, and the fluid in your joint then pushes it out the back. So my guess is that he has a history of some arthritis, because the arthritis will make your knee swell and make your Baker cyst show up. So I would suggest that he go in and see his physician about this. It could be as simple as removal of a loose body or some such thing to get his knee moving again. It sounds really active. So I'd go in and get that looked at, Bob, to find the cause of that, because my guess is it's not going to get better on its own.
And Scott in Northwoods, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi, folks. I fended off my last sciatic nerve attack 4 years ago, but until June I got pretty stressed out and, well, it was actually May that did it, waiting for the snow to melt up here. But,
yeah, we understand.
I went into the doctor, regular doctor. I don't have a picked-out doctor, of course. So I don't go that often. And all they would give me is muscle relaxer. And really, the back pain goes away after, you know, a few days. But then it's just the numb leg, the throbbing, you know, that keeps you up at night. And I just wanted them to give me something that could help me sleep, because I went almost a month without sleeping properly, and you know, you can't function if you can't sleep. So what would be a good painkiller for, you know, numb leg syndrome type?
Mm-hmm. Well, the medication of choice, and this is again what physicians will give you, generally people have trouble sleeping, the muscle relaxer route is where they go, and at least give that a trial for a few days, maybe a week or so. Muscle relaxers really aren't going to give you much help during the course of the day. They're not going to numb the pain, and they're not going to really facilitate healing. And so maybe to help somebody sleep could be viable. You know, the question would be is, why did this come out in the first place and prevent that? And like as I mentioned before, there are some exercises and some positioning you can give people to eliminate symptoms in the leg. And the numbness actually is, and the throbbing is most concerning. When I see people with your type of history, Scott, we talk about sleeping positions. We talk about mattress, ways to help keep your spine out of certain positions during the course of the night, certain exercises to do before you go to bed, and certain things you do first thing in the morning. So there are really additional routes besides medication that should be part of this, so it doesn't last for 4 to 6 weeks. You know, working with your doctor in terms of appropriate pain medication, but, you know, typically non-steroidals or Tylenol are prescribed by physicians in early stages to help with pain. But it's really also what you need to do to get the pressure off the nerve and prevent that nerve from getting stretched during the course of the day. That's what's setting you up for this pain at night.
Sure. I had to try to sleep sitting up most of the time. And, of course, I put the pillows under my legs and between and You know, I just needed something to knock me out.
Yeah.
Sure. And you know, you can't participate effectively in your rehab when you're so worn out because you're not sleeping at night. So we really need to create an environment where you can do the most to help heal yourself.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you, Scott, for calling. Appreciate it. And I want to give Allison in Plum Lake a chance to join us. Hi, Allison.
Hi. I'm so excited you're doing this. I'm currently working at a water park up in the North Woods. And I hear all of these stories every day from everybody. And I just want to put in a pitch for what I think we all need to do is lose some weight, be really well hydrated, get enough sleep, and be moving around a lot more than we are. I was a very active tomboy-like little girl. I was a skater and professional dancer as a young girl and a collegiate tennis player out in California. And then I hurt my ACL, which then, after starting to work a regular job, I was less active. And I noticed how it's easy to have this weight come on. And then I had a couple falls, winters, two winters in a row, where then I really was much more uncomfortable doing my normal activities. And you just put a lot of weight on and get really disappointed and even depressed. And so I want to put in a pitch for people to get in the water. Because, first of all, it hides half your body. And if you have arthritis, it absorbs some of the heat in your body. If you like music, you can bounce around and dance. You can bring any of your children with you, and they'll see you being active, which is a good role, you're a good role model. And then you could have friends and the social aspect and fun aspect of it. So I'd say get your butts to a water park where it's warm, your muscles can loosen up, and you can be a kid again. I think that would help a lot.
That's right.
That's a good prescription.
It is. It is great advice. And, you know, there are people, you know, I see a number of people in the pool who are fearful of the water. And that's understandable. And they should know, all you people out there who are afraid of the water, should know that, for example, in our warm water pool, you know, your head doesn't go under. People wear their glasses in the pool and they walk and we do gentle exercises and stretching. And it's interesting to watch people as they get in because you can see the relief come over their face when they get to a certain level of immersion. And it's just like, oh.
Yeah, I've been in water all the time.
So we understand a certain amount of fear of the water and just know that we're trained to deal with that. And, you know, I have people who came in clinging to the side who are now regular advocates for the pool.
Yeah. Nelson brings up some good points. And we've been talking about exercise with specific purposes to get pain out of the leg and then up into the back. You know, the goal of all that is to get symptoms under control so people can do things that they enjoy doing. You know, yeah. So I get toward the end of the rehab program. So what do you like to do? What do you have fun to do? And if you can make your activity fun, you're more likely to follow through, and it does put you in contact with other people. I mean, that's the goal, ultimately.
Yeah. Makes great sense. Thanks again, Allison, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And Ken in Lake Tomahawk. Getting lots of calls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great. Thanks for calling.
Just checking on a different part of the body, a frozen shoulder. I have a friend that's had it for about 4 or 5 months now and had 2 sessions of therapy, and neither one seems to be doing much.
Okay. Well, 4 months, you're about what? About a third of the way into it? Yeah. A third to a fourth of the way into it.
Well, it's awful long, you know.
It is. You know, the time course of the natural history of frozen shoulder. You know, about 18 to 20 months.
What is it really? It's just...
Can't move it? Well, it's adhesive capsulitis. Your shoulder joint is about like a golf ball sitting on a tee. Very shallow joint, and the big ball of the humerus sitting on there. So there's a joint capsule that has like accordion pleats in it, for lack of a better word, so that you can move your hand and get it above your head and behind your back and get into all those places you need to get it into. A frozen shoulder is when those pleats kind of adhere to one another. They get stuck, and so you can't move your shoulder. Usually you can't get your arm above 90 degrees. And it goes through predictable stages of freezing and then eventually thawing. We call it the thawing stage. And, you know, there isn't a lot of research that shows that, you know, regular physical therapy, you know, on a weekly basis has a great deal of impact on it. Sometimes it can help with pain relief. We can show you progressions of your exercises. But really the bulk of it is done at home on your own. You have to stick with it. We teach you things as you start to improve, but it's very slow, very slow. And you just kind of have to be patient.
Lymphedema in that arm.
What's that?
She also has lymphedema in that arm.
Ooh.
So I don't know if that's causing it too.
Well, it's that they're probably interrelated. They're probably kind of feeding off of each other.
Oh,
so swelling in that arm. And I don't know which came first, the frozen shoulder or the lymphedema, but at
the same time, I think.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So, but the physical therapist, what's that?
Does heat help at all?
Well, heat or there are, if she's got that swelling in her arm, there are, compression, mechanized cold compression that they can put on your arm to help with that swelling. So that may help. And really, at this point, what feels best to her and helps her get her shoulder moving is probably what you need to do. The pool's a great place for that because, the hydrostatic pressure will help with the swelling in the arm.
And thanks again, Ken, for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenall today, physical therapists. They'll be with us right up until 12:30, excuse me. We'll take a break for news, and then we'll be back with our two guests. Stay with us. We'll be back. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to recover from, or maybe you've got a new twinge that's made an appearance, I know it's tough to have to deal with those aches and pains. Larry Mueller here, and I'm glad to have with us Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. They are with us to share what they know about physical therapy, and their experiences have been, they've had a lot of great experiences and have been wonderful about sharing those experiences with you and with me over the last many years now. I don't even know how many years. How
I think,
many?
I think this is 20.
20?
My last count,
yeah. Goodness.
Wow,
yeah,
we should have a cake or something.
Yes,
wow.
We should. Yeah, they'll remember that next time we're here.
I know, maybe cupcakes or something.
That'll work.
Yeah. Anyway, we have lines. Every line is full with people who have issues, ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain. And so let's get to it. That number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Diane in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
I myself am a senior citizen with lots of arthritis since the age of 30, but I have a daughter who's 44, and she's an exercise freak. She runs. She runs in marathons. She does kickboxing. She does weightlifting. Now she has to drive an hour to and from work and has developed a pain in her butt from sitting. What can she do? Mm-hmm. I think it's sciatica, but of course she doesn't.
Yeah, I understand. You're just her mom.
Yeah.
Yes. I've heard that from my kids for a long time. Well, the pain in the buttock like that, is it related to some of her exercise? Is it related to her driving? I mean, it could be just
the car seat, maybe?
The car. You know, if this has been going on for more than 4 weeks, 6 weeks, she's tolerating less activity, then if she hasn't been seen, she should be seen and try to sort out.
What kind of doctor?
Well, if she can see, has she had problems like this in the past? Do you know?
No, it's a new thing.
Okay.
And I guess somebody told her to stretch it out.
Yeah, well, sometimes stretching can help. My guess is with some of the things, her activity, she's doing some stretching. And as I mentioned before, sometimes stretching actually can get people into trouble, can cause more symptoms. You know, it's kind of open. She can start with her medical doctor. If that's her desire, she could see a physical therapist. Again, whoever sees her should examine her back and her hip and do a good nervous system screen, and really needs to walk through with her daily her weekly activities, and try to figure out what's causing this. Once that happens, then she's on the road to recovery. But as physical therapists, we spend a ton of time on function and activity, trying to figure out what's the culprit, and then what can we modify or change. Again, it could be related to exercise program. Sometimes we all have good intentions, but it can be too much without adequate rest. Lori's talked a number of times about dosing in exercise program. That also goes related to kickboxing and running.
And if she's got 2 hours a day in the car, I mean, that car seat.
Yeah, yes. car seat's a big deal. And if she happens to be a morning exerciser, so she exercises and then she gets in a car and sits, to me, that sequence of activities can be difficult. I just know people who have, when they exercise in the morning, and actually morning exercisers are the most consistent exercisers, so I encourage people to exercise in the morning. But then if she gets that nerve just a little bit irritated from her kickboxing or whatever she's doing, and then she sits on it, that could be a problem as well. So, you know, changing up the car seat to take some of the pressure off of it, either with towel rolls or something.
Yeah, and I'm not sure she has classic sciatica, Diane, from what you described, but it could lead to this. But for people who have sciatica, when they're driving, like Lori mentioned, you want to make sure that their spine is upright. You don't want them slumping back or, you know, rounding out their low back. So a towel in the small of their back and add some support. And move the car seat a little closer to the steering wheel. If they're sitting way back and then your painful leg has to reach for the pedals, that's like doing a seated straight leg raise, which again puts a lot of stretch on the nerve. And so moving that car seat up toward the steering wheel can help to a degree.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Diane, for calling. Lynette in Dover, Minnesota. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to mention something. I had intense pain that lasted for months and was told that I had a herniated disc and arthritis, and nothing seemed to help. I did exercise quite a bit until I got an elliptical, and that just really seemed to help me for some reason. And I don't, you know, I'm not on it for an hour a day or anything. A lot of times it's only 10 to 15 minutes, but just that every day, I haven't had back pain since.
That's fantastic. And again, that's kind of why we often suggest that people come in and see a PT for a visit or two, because an elliptical for you might be a terrible thing for somebody else because of their anatomy and because of what other existing problems they have. You know, I don't want people to everyone out and say, oh, someone did an elliptical and she got better, so I'm going to do an elliptical too. The exercise is very individual. So that was the ticket for you, and that's wonderful. And keep it up forever and ever, hallelujah. Mm-hmm. For someone else, it might be a different mode of exercise, but absolutely, exercise is going to be the key to maintaining good health in the long run.
Yeah, and, you know, and this kind of brings up a point that we haven't made yet. Lynette, if they did imaging today, your arthritis is probably still there, and the herniated disc is probably still there to a degree. So when someone's diagnosed with these types of conditions with imaging, it doesn't mean you're doomed forever to have symptoms. There are a lot of people that have a herniated disc that have never had back pain, have never had sciatica. There's been a number of studies that show there are a percentage of people that have abnormal anatomy but no symptoms. And so you're describing as a great example that you found the right ticket for you. The disc problem is still there, but you've changed enough in terms of strength and endurance and things that have gotten you over the hump.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Lynn. Appreciate it. And Donna in Luck, Wisconsin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering, besides physical therapy, which should help him, my son fell out of his tree stand when he was 15, he's 20 now. He broke 11 bones in his back, not the big bones in your spine, but the ones surrounding, you know, the fractal. Mm-hmm. And he's always in pain, not excruciating or anything. It doesn't really stop him. He's very active. He's extremely well fit. But he does have pain every day, and he rotates between ibuprofen, Tylenol, Aleve, and I know when he's older, he's going to be in trouble.
but what can he look forward to? What can he do? Maybe give himself a better future? Besides wear his harness and his tree stand.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a good place to start. Yeah. So has he seen a physical therapist along the way?
Not since initially.
Okay, all right. Now's a really good time to see a physical therapist. There may be some specific types of stretching that he needs to do, and not just for his spine, but for his hips or maybe even upper back.
Lately he said he's been getting on lower left side of his back, like tightness, and then pain down his leg.
Yeah, because the more motion he can do through his hips, the less his spine has to do. And also, even if he is fit, it doesn't mean that he's got adequate core strength, especially considering the injury that he had 5 years ago. And as active as he is, he needs to be put on a good progressive core program that helps meet the demands of his activities. And now's a good time to go in. The therapist would assess him from a movement perspective, what movements are free and easy to do, which movements are limited and painful, and then help him change that. And then working on hip flexibility and core strength will be an important ticket for him, an important combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, Bill brings up a good point, and that is, you know, many times people see a physical therapist initially after their injury or their surgery or whatever, but the time course of healing takes months to years, and people change over the years. So what you were doing 2 years ago or a year ago or 5 years ago after the acute phase of your injury may not be at all the things you should be doing now as your body has changed. So a periodic checkup and retooling your exercise program to meet your current needs is really important.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Donna, for calling. You know, just as an aside, the harness while you're in a tree stand is really important. But frankly, most of the injuries out of tree stands are when you're getting in or getting out. Yeah. And then you can't have that harness on. So just a reminder to people to take extreme care when you're climbing up to that tree stand or when you're getting out of it. Yeah. That's when I think it's something like 90% of the accident, at least 80% happen. In that time period. So just a little aside. Stacy in Kenosha, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. Perhaps my call was a little premature. I was unable to access the radio. I'm at work and heard the beginning of the show in my car and have been listening to via my phone. I have heard the radio discussion. So my first question would have been different, and now I guess all I would ask is that have these folks and do the panel ever recommend alternative and complementary therapies such as acupuncture for their patients?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. At our spine physical therapy department, we have some manual therapy, we have massage, we have acupuncture, so we recommend any or all of those as complementary to what we do. You know, typically depending on patient preference, many times a patient will come in and say, you know, I've done this in the past or I'd like to try this, and we say, fantastic. Or if things are not working out as well, we'd say, you know, have you considered this? So we take a very holistic perspective of patient care.
There you go.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. I appreciate you answering my call.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing up that important point that we hadn't addressed yet.
Eunice in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Eunice.
Hi. You want to know my problem?
Yes. I'm sorry you have it, but let us know what it is.
Okay. It was diagnosed as the Quervain disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in my left wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, I was pulling weeds, which I think maybe was started it. But
yes.
I kept it in an ACE bandage for 2 weeks, and it didn't improve. And so I went to the doctor, and he diagnosed it.
Mm-hmm.
And he put me on aspirin, two aspirin twice a day, and and ice packs twice a day, and then a splint to wear. And I thought maybe it was improving a little, and I had some pots of flowers that needed to get in the house, and I carried them in, and then it got much worse. And
well,
so I'm just back on the regime, but I don't know if there's anything else I can do.
Well, Eunice, you've brought up a really good point with your story. So de Quervain's, is it a tendonitis that happens in your wrist, on the thumb side of your wrist, comes from doing a lot of grabbing or pulling from a lot of wrist and hand movement. So, you know, the regimen you are put on is great in the acute phase to help you recover from the inflammation. However, you never went on to the next phase, which is the rehabilitation or the re-strengthening of those muscles. So when they have that inflammation and then they're immobilized, you know, in an ace bandage or wrist splint disuse because it hurts, they need to be re-strengthened again. So yes, physical therapy would help to help regain the strength in that hand so that when you go back out to repot plants or to do household chores or whatever it is, you have the strength in that hand to do it. Otherwise, you end up in this vicious cycle of the muscles are weak, you go out and do something, you re-irritate it and inflame it, so then you rest it some more, it continues to get weaker, and you have this vicious cycle. So you do need some exercise to strengthen that back up and prevent that cycle.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Mike in Green Bay, hello.
Hi. Let me preface this. I had sciatica 5 years ago, and so and it's sort of, I got PTSD from it. So I just want to make sure that it's not coming back. I recently started with a new trainer, and I told him that I have leg discrepancy length. My whole body is like one half inch longer than the other. And so I was wondering, he wants me to do these squats, and he thinks these squats, I can't do them because my hip is tight. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my hips are tight. And I think it's because of my leg discrepancy, my whole body. It seems for my whole life, all my problems have been on my right side. So I'm just my legs, my shoulders are a little bit higher. And so I only can do, I could bench press like 185. I only can do squats maybe like up to 65 pounds, only 10 pound weights on either side. So he's forcing me, you know, I'm trying to put my pelvis under. And I just feel like there's the last few weeks I'm feeling numb in my right toe and right above my right glute. And I'm just paranoid if he's aggravating this. And if it's true that maybe my hips are just tight and I'm flexing it all the time, but I just wondered if I'm doing damage to it.
Well, I'll let Bill address the bigger issue, but from my perspective, I'm not a huge fan of squats, of putting a bar with weight, compressing your spine when you have a history of spine problems. There are other ways to strengthen yourself without putting load onto your spine from the top. You think about what we do when we treat people with back pain. We try to unload it. We put them in traction. We put them in a pool. So adding a bar with weight onto it on the top side to add further compressive forces to your spine doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I would agree. And there are lots of ways to strengthen those muscles without doing a squat. I've seen a number of people with back issues or sciatica issues who've been doing lots of squats and deadlifts, and that's what's really gotten them into trouble. So if you continue to – my couple of things. If you continue to work with this individual, I would just tell them you're not doing squats anymore. And what are some alternatives they can give you instead of doing squats to strengthen these muscle groups? And there should be lots of options. Anything that increases the numbness in your toes or pain in your leg, you want to avoid. Your body's telling you this isn't for me at this point in time. And so, again, there should be lots of lifting you can do that doesn't bring those symptoms on, but they need to individualize the program for you, considering not only what you currently have symptom-wise, what you've had in the past.
Right.
Good. It's a good thing you called.
Yep, absolutely.
Very good thing you called.
And if your trainer wants to argue with you about it, I'd just find somebody new.
Yeah. Listen to that advice, Mike. Let's go to Rosemary in Lamar's, Iowa. Thank you so much for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling on behalf of my husband. He has degenerative disc disease and spinal stenosis. In the past 12 years, he's had three lumbar fusions. His concern is that he still can't walk any significant distance without pain in his hip. He often has to stop and rest for a few minutes, and then he can get up and go a little longer. I've noticed when we go shopping, he is always looking for the motorized cart rather than walking because of the pain and weakness in walking. Are there some, what kind of of exercises can he do when he's not able to do the walking?
Well, he's caught between a rock and a hard place. I mean, walking is important for activity, but clearly this is pain that he can't work through or can't force himself through. Rosemary, has he seen a physical therapist in the last couple of months?
No, he hasn't.
Okay.
He did shortly after, right after the last fusion year ago. But, it was three or four sessions and
that was it. Okay.
Yeah. And this goes back to what Lori just mentioned before. I mean, I'm really glad you called about this. The appropriate physical therapy done a year ago after the fusion is very different compared to what he needs now. You know, the assumption is the fusion's he's recovered from the surgery. Hopefully the fusion is solid. But a physical therapist can help try to figure out where is this hip pain coming from? Is it related to the spine or is it related to the hip? There may be certain areas that need to be stretched and other areas that need to be strengthened to increase his mobility. And in the meantime, can help your husband find a good medium to exercise. Again, if a pool is an option, my guess is he could do a lot of walking in the pool and do much better and start building up his endurance. If a pool's not an option, sometimes there are unweighting machines where you can get on a treadmill in a harness and actually give a little bit of traction while you're on the treadmill. So, again, to help increase his endurance. So the rehab approach would be very different now than what he had shortly after the surgery.
Yeah, very good. Good luck to you, Rosemary, and to your husband. Thank you so much. And Ray in Rhinelander was wondering about glucosamine for joints. Do you recommend or is it?
Well, there's research to support that glucosamine chondroitin, is helpful for your joints. About half the people notice some benefit from taking them. Some people don't. You usually have to take them for 2 to 3 months before you can notice any benefit. But there is a fair amount of research to support their use, mostly when measuring symptoms, not necessarily looking at the joint tissue itself. But people report that they feel better. If you feel better, you're more active. And then if you're more active, that's helpful in the long run.
Yeah.
Doesn't appear to be much from a downside perspective,
right.
Correct?
Right.
Yeah. I may have told you this before, but I started taking fish oil for another reason and noticed after several months that suddenly all my little aches and pains were gone.
Yeah.
I felt a lot better.
Yep.
And so that was a real benefit for me.
Yeah, we call those nutraceuticals, and there's a number of those that support joint health. Yeah.
Lori and Bill, it's always a great pleasure. Thank you so much, and we will look forward to your visit on November 17th.
Perfect. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill Boisenall, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, celebrating, we think, about 20 years of being with us and offering great advice. Tomorrow at 11, Paul Kinzer talks about some exciting astronomical events that are coming our way. And then 11:45, Jack Socha takes a look at your digital camera and has some advice about taking those photos. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.